Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, October 13th. MMH. Feds have bigger stick than Abbott. Governor Abbott issued executive order cracking down on vaccine mandates. By Stuart Doreen. Midland Health CEO Stephen Bowerman stated Tuesday that the hospital district feels like it is in the middle of a tug-of-war battle between the federal and state governments. One day earlier, Texas Governor Greg Abbott issued another executive order cracking down on COVID-19 vaccine mandates. That move from the state followed President Biden's order in September for new vaccination requirements that will include healthcare workers. Both agencies, the state government and the federal government, have sticks that they can swing at us if we don't comply with their mandates, Bowerman said. Likely for us at this point, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services swings the biggest stick. They can hold our license. They can pull our license. Bowerman said Tuesday that the hospital still does not have a mandate in place for employees. He said CMS stated they are working with OSHA on regulations and guidelines on the mandate and hope to issue those in late October. So we're probably still a couple of weeks away from getting any kind of guidance, Bowerman said. We'll see what those guidelines outline for us and communicate with our workforce. We know that remains a hot topic, not just with our employees, but across the state. What's going to happen with this mandate? Bowerman said Midland Health has concerns about staff leaving if a mandate is put into place. He said Tuesday that around 73% of the 2,300-person workforce is vaccinated. Yeah, that's a risk that concerns us, that we may have some reaction to a mandate, Bowerman said. I wonder where they would end up if other hospitals across the state are following that same federal mandate. It's an unfortunate position, obviously, for everybody to be in. We want everybody to get vaccinated. We want a safe community and try to get things back to normal as soon as we can. But that certainly is a risk. South, one of many schools benefiting from partnership. West Texas Food Bank and Pioneer partnered to fill area schools' pantries, by J.C. Lewis. Pioneer Natural Resources and the West Texas Food Bank celebrated a new partnership to fund 9 school food pantries in 5 counties Tuesday. WTFB and Pioneer employees visited South Elementary Food Pantry to see how students help distribute food to their families and classmates' families. South Parent Liaison Barbara B. Yarbrough said the students get a sense of ownership in the pantry as well. She said she doesn't hold the students' hands while they work in the pantry. Yarbrough said the students participate in the shelving and restocking as well as getting bags of food together for their classmates. "They're going to pack Friday bags, and they had asked me what we were going to put in them," she said. "You guys make the decisions of what they will be putting into the Friday bags." Yarbrough said she is teaching them to shop for themselves while still making sure nutritional options are taken care of, because otherwise the students might pack only the sweet things. Yarbrough said the biggest need for the pantry is food that students can eat when they get home, such as ravioli and Vienna sausages. Multiple students who work in the pantry said they felt proud of themselves while helping in the pantry. "It is interesting to see them here, and they're so excited about it," she said. "They really recognize it is being their store with organizing items and showcasing them." South Elementary School Principal Leticia Camarillo said the partnership between the West Texas Food Bank, Pioneer, and the students is amazing to see. "Our students work and understand how a grocery store functions," she said. "They get the sense of purchasing items. The food is free at the pantry. Restocking and looking at expiration dates to make sure food is cycled in a timely manner." Pioneer Community Affairs and Communications Director Anna Lee Navarro said the partnership came about thanks to the Employee Resource Group, which is a grassroots effort that volunteers and coordinates donation collections. As the years have progressed, we wanted to grow our relationship with the West Texas Food Bank and make a bigger difference to partner in our community, where it really does make a difference for these families, she said. WTFB Executive Director Libby Campbell said Pioneer has always been an amazing corporate sponsor. We have seen a huge increase over the last year, with upwards of a 32% need. Even the backpack program has continued to grow, and the school pantries are continuing to need more resources, Campbell said. Having such a strong corporate partner, Pioneer, to come in and fund these pantries makes sure we can keep these shelves stocked so families can get the food they need. Pioneer Vice President of Operations and Accounting, Deanne Key, said she was impressed by the students during the visit because of their leadership. The students who help in the pantry impressed me with how they are responsible for making this be a store and the connection, that sense of ownership and feeding the hungry, which isn't a usual connection, she said. Other school pantries benefiting from the partnership include Forsan, La Mesa ISD Food Pantry, San Jacinto Middle School, Idea Travis Elementary, ECISD Community Outreach Center, Bowie Middle School, Horned Frog Pantry, Odessa High School, and Rankin. Those pantries are not open to the public. County to start cemetery project. Residents said property had been forgotten about, by Caitlin Randall. Midland County Commissioners on Monday approved the first step to make infrastructure improvements and other upgrades at Fairview Cemetery. The Commissioners' Court unanimously voted on Monday to go out for bid on installing an in-ground irrigation system at the cemetery. Residents had asked commissioners to install a new sprinkler system at a meeting on September 27th. At the meeting, residents who have family members buried at the cemetery said that the property had been forgotten and ignored. "It's shameful and hurtful to go out there and see the graves of your loved ones covered in weeds," June Cowden told the court at the previous meeting. Following the comments from community members on September 27th, the commissioner's court allocated $600,000 from contingency toward restoring the cemetery. Facilities Director Eddie Melendez said Monday that going out for bid on the irrigation system would get the county started on making needed upgrades. "This will take some time," Melendez said. "We're not going to rush by any means on doing this." Before the new system can be installed, he said the county will need to identify roads where grass is overgrown to ensure they're placing lines in the correct spots. The county will also look at whether the source of the water will be well water or city water and planting more trees, he said. Additionally, on Monday, commissioners approved creating a position for a public information officer. The position was budgeted for during earlier budgeting sessions. Commissioners said the public information officer would serve as a liaison to the news media and to keep the public informed about county business. "I envision this person will really help the public understand the good things we're doing with their tax money," Commissioner Randy Prude said during the meeting. A motion to post the job position passed 3-1, with Commissioner Scott Ramsey casting the dissenting vote and Commissioner Robin Donnelly abstaining. The next Commissioners' Court meeting will be held at 9 a.m., October 25th, at the Midland County Courthouse. Midlander sentenced for January 6th participation, by Caitlin Randall. Midlander Eliel Rosa was sentenced on Tuesday morning after pleading guilty in July for participating in the January 6th riots at the U.S. Capitol building. Washington, D.C. Judge Trevor McFadden sentenced Rosa to 1 year of probation, a $500 fine, and 100 hours of community service. Rosa pleaded guilty to demonstrating inside a Capitol building in exchange for the government dropping the other charges against him, including a felony obstruction charge. McFadden said Rosa's conduct at the Capitol was shocking, given that Rosa is an asylee from Brazil. However, he added that he believed it was an aberration for Rosa. The judge said he considered the remorse Rosa has expressed and that Rosa turned himself into the FBI when deciding his sentence. Why Social Security COLA will jump next year, by Ricardo Alonso Zaldivar, Associated Press, Washington. Rising inflation is expected to lead to a sizable increase in Social Security's annual cost of living adjustment, or COLA, for 2022. Exactly how much will be revealed Wednesday morning after a Labor Department report on inflation during September, a data point used in the final calculation. Over the last 10 years, the Social Security COLA has averaged about 1.7% annually as inflation remained low. But the economic recovery from the coronavirus pandemic has triggered rising prices for a wide range of goods and services, and that's expected to translate to bigger checks for retirees. Why are Social Security benefits adjusted? Policymakers say the COLA works to preserve the purchasing power of Social Security benefits and shouldn't be seen as a pay hike for retirees. At one time, Congress had to approve inflation increases, but starting in the mid-1970s, lawmakers turned that function over to nonpartisan experts within the government bureaucracy. The annual review is now tied to changes in an official measure of inflation and proceeds automatically and with no political brinksmanship. How big an increase in 2022? Stay tuned. The Great Recession saw a COLA increase of 5.8% for 2009, and the number for next year may rival that. This summer, government economic experts predicted a COLA in the range of 6%. If that's the case, it would be the biggest Social Security hike the vast majority of baby boomer retirees have seen. Up to now, they've collected meager to modest annual adjustments, not counting 3 years for which there was no COLA because inflation barely showed a pulse. A 6% COLA would increase the average Social Security payment for a retired worker close to $93 a month to $1,636 next year. Compare that to this year's COLA, worth only about $20 a month. What's changed over the past year? As the economy recovers from the shock of coronavirus shutdowns, prices are rising at a pretty good clip. Gas serves as an ever-present reminder, above $3 a gallon in most states, $4 a gallon in California and Hawaii. But food had already been going up, and so are labor costs, as employers compete to hire choosy workers seeking higher pay and better benefits. Add to the mix supply chain problems that have slowed deliveries of everything from refrigerators to running shoes. All that gets sifted into the prices that consumers pay for their everyday needs. Who's affected? The COLA is big enough to have an impact on the overall economy. It affects the household budgets of about 1 in 5 Americans, including Social Security recipients, disabled veterans, and federal retirees, about 70 million people. About half of seniors live in households where Social Security benefits account for at least 50% of their income, and one quarter rely on their monthly payment for all or nearly all their earnings. For this latter group, the COLA can literally make a difference in what they're able to put on the table. Do private pensions also provide a COLA? Inflation protection is central to Social Security's benefit design, but it's not so common among traditional private pensions. Benefits paid by most employer plans gradually lose some of their purchasing power over the years. Social Security not only increases retiree checks to compensate for inflation, but it then adds that amount to a person's underlying benefit, so it grows with compounding as future COLAs are factored in. Can Social Security afford to keep paying COLAs? Proposals have been floated both to increase or trim back COLAs in the context of a broader Social Security overhaul. Many advocates for older people argue that the inflation index currently used does not adequately reflect the higher health care costs faced by the aging. On the other side, groups pressing to reduce federal deficits urge switching to an alternate inflation measure that factors in consumers' habit of substituting cheaper goods when prices rise. That would yield slightly lower estimates of cost of living changes. Social Security trustees said in their report this year that the program's long-term fiscal imbalance is casting a longer shadow. For the first time in 39 years, the cost of delivering benefits will exceed Social Security's total income from payroll tax collections and interest. From here on in, Social Security will have to tap its savings to pay full benefits. The report also moved up the exhaustion date for Social Security's massive trust fund by 1 year to 2034. At that point, the program will be able to pay only 78% of scheduled benefits, the report said. Such a reduction would represent a major hardship for most people who depend on Social Security, even middle-class retirees. But hardly anyone with political power in Washington is talking about fixes. Opinion from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Opinion Extra. Government shouldn't fund mailers about elections. Stuart Doreen. The Midland County Commissioners' Court should not fund a mailer about their proposed sales tax initiative that is on the November 2 ballot. It was a mistake when the previous Midland ISD administration spent tens of thousands of dollars to do it, and probably was a big reason the bond failed, and it was a mistake for four county commissioners to vote to do the same. Here's why. If the residents of Midland County thought this was worthy, they would have come together, created a political action committee, and funded this initiative. Second, the commissioners who voted for this obviously believe this mailer will help passage of a sales tax increase. If they didn't, taxpayer funding of this mailer would have never come before the court. Third, the mailer contains language that could be seen as political, including the first sentence. Many Texas counties have found it challenging to fund public services, projects, and programs. Really? Who stated this as fact? It is worth stating that Scott Ramsey was the only county commissioner that voted against the mailer. All that should be done by a PAC, Political Action Committee, Ramsey said. That's the job of the people who are out there advocating for it, not the county. Using county dollars, to me, is advocacy. There was conversation that took place that at this point there wasn't a PAC, and early voting starts on October 18th. Luis Sanchez, for instance, stated, whether we agree with it or not, it's just information that needs to go out. And if that means using county funds, so be it. Let it be said that in the past week, the Reporter-Telegram offered space in this newspaper to provide the same type of awareness efforts that we provided the school district prior to its bond election. My expectation is that TV and radio media would have done the same thing had county leaders called. Questions. What does it say that supporters of this tax increase could not find people to create a PAC to make this happen? Commissioners hired a lawyer to navigate through the election-related items associated with this ballot initiative in April. Why does this seem like a last-minute effort to generate awareness, support? We are talking about potentially $80 million in additional annual revenue for county leaders. That is a number that came from County Judge Terry Johnson, Combine that with money the county will collect from its current sales tax haul, and that is about $120 million and $160 million a year. What will that buy county residents? No one can say for sure. Obituaries and death notices from the MRT for Wednesday. Anita Dolores Norris went to be with the Lord on October 10th. The family will host a time of celebrating Anita's life from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, October 14th, at Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Attendees are encouraged to come any time during those hours. Refreshments will be served. Anita was born to Jean and Monroe Mings on September 26, 1946. Anita is survived by her husband, Jay Norris of Midland, son Ron Mahan, wife Terry of Midland, grandchildren and great-grandchildren, stepson Alan Norris and Leslie. Anita is also survived by her lifelong friend and former mother-in-law, Ruby Mahan, of Odessa. Anita's six siblings surviving her are Dwayne Mings of Tulia, Carol Lester of North Richland Hills, Elaine Mings of Dolores, Colorado, Sharon Rubenstein of Roseville, California, Linda K. Marr and husband Bill of Fort Sumner, New Mexico, Michael Mings and wife Retha of Hobbs, New Mexico, as well as numerous nephews and nieces. Anita was preceded in death by daughter Kim Mahan Green, her parents, and first husband Ronnie Lee Mahan Sr. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Beth Yeshua Messianic Congregation, bethyeshua.org, West Texas Food Bank, WTFB.com, Salvation Army, salvationarmy.org. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Betty Louise Polk Gullidge passed away on July 29th, 2 days before her 96th birthday. She was born in Logan County, West Virginia, on July 31st, 1925, to Charles H. and Pearl Boggs Polk. Beth was preceded in death by husband of 63 years, M.C. Gullidge, her parents, sister Ruth Polk Milhoen, and brother Charles Vernon Polk, who died at age 3. She is survived by children M. Lane Gullidge, Laura Lee and Alan Reed, and Lois Bell. Son Les Gullidge died 1 week following her death. Also surviving her are her grandchildren and great-grandson. A celebration of her life will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park at 1 p.m. on Friday, October 15th. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Larry B. Simners, 84, formerly of Midland, now McKinney, passed away on Sunday, October 10th. Larry was born in Pomona, California on November 28, 1936, to the late Augustus Hobson and Bernie Ola Simmers. He is survived by his daughter Wendy Simmers, his son and daughter-in-law Mark and Janet Simmers, his grandsons. He is preceded in death by his wife Jackie Simmers. A public visitation will be Thursday, October 14th from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home in Midland. Graveside service will be 9 a.m. Friday, October 15th at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. Classic cars are encouraged. In lieu of flowers, the family wishes for you to consider making a memorial donation in Larry's name to Evanescent Mustang Rescue and Sanctuary in Sherman, Texas. Shelby Lynn Crawford, 71, of Midland, went home to be with the Lord on Friday, October 1st. Shelby was born April 28, 1950, in Hayward, California, to Charles Edward Dempsey and Burla Bell Weber. She married Robert Joseph Crawford in 1972. Shelby was preceded in death by her parents, brother Dana Dempsey, sister Sharon Farley, and son Jason Crawford. She is survived by her son Joshua Crawford and wife Teresa of Josephine, Texas, grandson and two granddaughters, daughter-in-law Christy Lynn Crawford of Midland, brother-in-law Bill Farley, nieces, nephews, great-nieces, and a great-nephew. A memorial for Shelby will be held at Calvary Assembly of God Church in Midland on Friday, October 22nd at 1 p.m., officiated by Pastor Brad Smith. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Carol Sue Barrett, 85, of Midland, passed away September 30th. A memorial service will take place at 10 a.m. at First Baptist Church Chapel on Thursday, October 14th. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Ed Frazier, 56, of Midland, passed away September 26th. The family will receive friends on Friday, October 15th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on Saturday, October 16th, at 11 a.m. at True Light Christian Fellowship. Survivors include wife Johnetta Jackson Frazier and children Tanisha R. Ross, Eddie Akeem Frazier, Merlin Thomas, M.T. Frazier, Bershanta Jolisa Frazier, Clarence Rahim Frazier, Marlon Rashad Washington, and Marcus Tremaine Washington. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Joanne Colt, 89, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, October 10th. Graveside services will be held on Saturday, October 16th at 10 a.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Roger Pena Sr., 56, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, October 9th. A viewing will be held on Thursday, October 14th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with an evening service at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. He is survived by his wife, Tracella Cisneros, his son, Roger Luke Pena, Jr., two daughters, Crystal Sophia Pena and Casey Pena, one brother, four sisters, numerous grandchildren, uncles, aunts, nephews, nieces, and cousins.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, October 13th, 2021. Students Hear from Community Difference Makers by Ruth Campbell. About 150 students from high school around Odessa learned about the backgrounds of prominent people in the community Tuesday as part of Leer es Saber, or Reading is Knowledge. Organized by Hispanic Heritage of Odessa and the League of United Latin American Citizens, the program was held at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church and was billed as a Columbus Day reading program. The event featured presentations from Odessa Police Chief Mike Girk, Fire Marshal Michelle Cervantes, Odessa High School Principal Mauricio Marquez, and Marisol Christman, Director of Corporate and Foundation Relationships and Endowment Compliance Officer at University of Texas, Permian Basin. The theme was AHORA, the immediate response to stroke victims. Each dignitary described the journey that has gotten them to this point. Girk grew up in Pecos on a family farm picking cantaloupes and chopping cotton. He was planning to go to University of Texas at Austin to be a chemistry major. But between high school and college, he went to a party where his best friend was shot and killed. When he was 17, Girk said, he was a pallbearer at his best friend's funeral. That wakes you up. So even when I was at UT, it didn't feel right. So I came home, I worked on the family farm for a little bit, and at some point I said, you know what, law enforcement is where I need to be. And our theory of law enforcement and Odessa Police Department is there are some bad people in this world. I think we saw that on August 31st, 2019, when there was an active shooter. There were some bad people, but by and large, most of the people in this community are great people, Girk said. So in law enforcement, we say we need to focus on those really bad people, and everyone else, you just make their lives better, he added. Girk asked the students to ask themselves what they can do to make their community, family, and this world a better place. Fire Marshal Michelle Cervantes was born in Alpine and grew up in Andrews. Cervantes targeted her talk to the young women in the room. She noted that it's not easy to get in and advance, but it is changing drastically in that you see more women in powerful positions. She urged them to do whatever they want, set goals, make sure they finish school, and don't give up. Because again, it's not easy for women. You probably have to work a little bit harder, but the rewards are great, Cervantes said. Galindo said he was born in Odessa but lived in Mexico for a few years. He said he got to experience the culture, which has helped him in his career as a law enforcement officer, as he can speak Spanish fluently. But one thing I want to tell you is you have to find something that you like. When I was your age, when I was in high school, I didn't know what I wanted to do either, Galindo said. He added that he was blessed because he had an uncle who worked for federal law enforcement. He got to go around with his uncle and realized that was something he was interested in. So I enrolled in the academy and did what I had to do. And now, like I say, I've been here 25 years. I love what I do. Every day is something new, something different. I love working with the community. Like I said, I like what I do, so my best advice to you is to find something that you like to do and work your career around that, Galindo said. Marquez grew up in Monahans. His parents came to Texas from Mexico, and his father died when Marquez was 6, leaving his mother to raise Marquez and his 3 brothers. I was 6. My little brother was 8. My oldest brother was 10. Most people would say that I grew up poor. We didn't have much, but truth be told, I won the lottery the day I was born because I was born to a lady by the name of Rosa Marquez, Marquez said. He added that even though they didn't have financial means, they had what they needed. He pointed out that there's a difference between what we want and what we need. And my mom always made sure that we had everything that we needed, which was called family. When they got home every day and my brothers got home, there was always food on the table. Even though she could not help us with our work because she did not speak English, she made them do their work, Marquez said. He added that his mother knew that education would one day change the trajectory of their lives. When I was around your age, I knew what I was going to do because I had an amazing mother who helped me along my journey. And then I had amazing teachers, coaches, and principals that helped me throughout my journey. Like my head basketball coach, I just told you that I lost my father when I was 6. My head basketball coach became a father figure. because I was fairly good. I was a team captain, and sometimes I thought I was too good to practice, and he put me back in place, Marquis said. He thanked his coach for doing that and his teachers for helping him along the way. Kreisman also is from Monahans. Her parents came to the United States separately from Mexico. They met later on in life in Monahans. They didn't come together. They came with their families or cousins, she said. I don't know how many of you can relate to that. It is a tough, tough life when you are first generation born here in the United States. We are stuck between two worlds. We are stuck with our Mexican family, and I say Mexican because at that time when my family got here, they were still Mexicans. They were not Americanized. They were not assimilated. They were here for a better life, and for that I thank them. I was also not American because the only other kids in my grade would call me Mexican. They'd say, "There's the Mexican kid." Then they would use the derogatory term because Spanish was my only language. I didn't know English when I started school, so I was in those ESL classes. All my parents could ask me to do was at least graduate from high school. But after that, you're going to get married, you're going to stay home, and you're going to have babies. That's how I was raised. They didn't do that because they didn't want the best for me. That's all they knew, Kreisman said. Her parents didn't push education. They pushed work. She started working at age 13 in Monahans. It was hard for me to be in extracurricular activities because I needed to work, not to pay bills, Kreisman said. She thanked her parents for that. They never took any of my pay for bills, but they did say, if you want to play volleyball, if you want to be in drama, if you want to go to the prom, if you want nice clothes at the beginning of the year, that's on you. That will really motivate you to be successful when you get older because I wanted nice clothes. I wanted to play volleyball. I wanted to go to the prom, and they couldn't afford it for me. My dad worked in the oil field. The oil field back then is not what it is now. He did not make that kind of money, Kreisman said. Her mom was a cook where Kreisman worked. Her family didn't have a lot of money, but like Marquis's family, they didn't know they were poor, and they had what they needed. A teacher took Kreisman under her wing in her gifted and talented class in fourth grade and told Kreisman to push herself. All she wanted to do was to go to college, although she wasn't sure what it was. I am the first person in my family on both sides of the family with a bachelor's degree. It is in communications. My goal was to be a newscaster, and I quickly realized I don't want to get up at 2:30 in the morning, she said. She also declared she was going to leave West Texas and never come back. Here we are. It's that magnet, and you know what? This is the best decision I've ever made in my life. I've made the most career opportunities here. I worked in the nonprofit sector. I've worked with men and women with Chief Girk's office working child abuse cases here in Ector County. I've testified in court for those kids. I've advocated for children and teenagers because I didn't have anyone to do that for me. So if you want to go to college, I will make sure to find a way to get you to college. I'm also the first in my family to have a master's degree, a master's in public administration, Kreisman said. It was baby steps to get where I'm at now, and I still have goals for myself. She is now married and has 9-year-old twin boys. OHS AVID director Naomi Fuentes said it was hugely important for the students to see people from the community who have done well. They need to see people like them in these positions so that they know it's achievable, Fuentes said. She noted that it was also important, it doesn't matter where you come from. You are not your circumstances. Your choices are what drive your life, not where you were born. I loved that message today, Fuentes said. COVID-19 News by the Numbers. Hector County, 25,149 total cases, 504 deaths. Midland County, 27,523 total cases, 344 deaths. Texas, 4,135,512 total cases, 67,044 deaths. U.S. cases, 44,401,209 total confirmed and 714,243 deaths. Find out more at COVIDinthebasin.com. MCH releases COVID numbers. Medical Center Hospital has released its inpatient COVID numbers as of 9 a.m. Tuesday. 40 total COVID patients in-house. Med surgery, non-critical, 24 COVID patients. 19 unvaccinated, 3 vaccinated, 2 unknown. Critical care, 16 COVID patients, 14 on ventilators. 11 unvaccinated, 3 vaccinated, 2 unknown. Of the 14 COVID patients on ventilators, 3 are vaccinated, 9 are unvaccinated, 2 unknown. Age ranges of COVID patients are 31 to 93 years old. Patients from outside Hector County include one from Andrews, one from Big Springs, one from Camp Wood, 4 from Fort Stockton, 1 from Jal, New Mexico, 1 from Kermit, 2 from Midland, 1 from Pecos. The rest are Odessa Hector County. Quick Hits. Coffee with a Cop. Coffee with a Cop has been scheduled from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. Thursday at Dumplings and Amigos, 401 West 42nd Street. Museum Events. The Petroleum Museum, 501 West Wall Street, Midland, has scheduled the following events. Thursday, 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., Brown Bag Lunch and Lecture Series with Rebecca Dodge. Drinks and desserts provided. Admission is free. October 18th, 9:30 a.m. to 10:30 or 11:30 a.m. to 12:30, Steam Sprouts, Lego Steam Park, ages 4 through 5. October 19th, 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m., Building Bots, Robotics and Engineering Fun Lab for grades 3 through 6. October 20 through the 22nd, Steam Break, Mad Science, Half Day or Full Day Options, grades 1 through 6. October 28th, Family Science Night, To Go, Spooky Science Spectacular, Free Family Science Experiment and Activity Boxes. All materials and information needed for experiments are included. Demonstrations start on Facebook at 6:30 p.m. Pre-registration and pickup sign-up required. Pre-registration is required for all STEAM, Fun Lab, and Spooky Science Spectacular events. To pre-register or for more information, visit petroleummuseum.org. Memorial Ceremony. The Crisis Center of West Texas has scheduled Remembrance and Hope, a DVAM memorial, part of Domestic Violence Awareness Month, from 12:30 p.m. to 1:15 p.m. Thursday at the University of Texas Permian Basin Quad. The ceremony will honor lives lost to domestic violence and recognize those still facing violence and abuse. Members of the public are welcome to attend. Registration is required. For tickets or more information, email Elizabeth Texera at elizabeth@ccwtx.org. Musical performance. The Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled Tom Lee Day at 6 p.m. Thursday. All are welcome for an evening of music in celebration of Texas artist Tom Lee as part of a statewide Tom Lee Month. Composer and musician Raymond Seth Bedford, orchestra head director for Odessa High School, will be performing a piece inspired by Tom Lee's mural Stampede. Visit noelartmuseum.org. Movie night. The First Baptist Church Mystery Movie Club, a women's ministry event, has scheduled WOW Movie Night at 6:30 p.m. Thursday in the Commons, 311 West 8th Street. The cost is $5. Text MOVIE to 40788 or sign up at https://bit.ly/3d61xly. Big Brothers Big Sisters Fundraiser. Country music legend Tracy Byrd will headline the 5th annual Wildcatters event benefiting Big Brothers Big Sisters Saturday at the Rolling Sevens Ranch Event Center, 1700 West County Road, 122 Midland. Opening act is Jeff Carson, a full-time police officer and part-time musician. There will be ranch-style midway games such as wine, whiskey, and whatever, ring toss, a shooting gallery with laser-powered pistols, gourmet s'mores by the campfire, a silent auction, and the opportunity to bid on bucket list trips to places like the Canadian Rockies, the Amalfi Coast, and Iceland with AmFund. Sponsors will be able to participate in a cornhole tournament and will be treated to a catered meal and a complimentary wine and beer bar. Those purchasing individual tickets will have access to all ranch-style midway games, the silent auction, gourmet s'mores by campfire, the concerts, and the complimentary wine and beer bar. Sponsorships range from $500 and up, and individual tickets are $100 each. A food truck will be on site to allow ticket holders the opportunity to purchase food. Money raised at the event stays in Midland and Odessa to find more mentors for children who are facing adversities such as single-parent homes and incarcerated parents. Services are always free. For more information, visit bbbspermianbasin.org. Stone Circle Activation. Ballroom Marfa, 108 East San Antonio Street, Marfa, has scheduled Stone Circle Activation at 7:30 p.m. October 20th. Reservations are available now. Book now at ballroommarfa.org/schedule a visit. ECISD Workshop Thursday. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees workshop meeting is scheduled for 6 p.m. Thursday. The gathering will be on the first floor boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Some of the agenda items are presentation of medical trust, a report on beginning of the year assessment data, and a presentation on STEM, which stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. Grand Finale Set for Fitness Challenge by OA News at OAOA.com. The 2021 30 for 30 Fitness Challenge Grand Finale, celebrating the 14th anniversary of the challenge, will be held from 12:30 p.m. to 1:15 p.m. Thursday at Mission Fitness at 8050 Highway 191, Frontage Road. The winner of the grand prize and the first and second runners-up will be drawn from the group of 10 finalists. The kids' grand prize, the team, and the school winners will also be announced. The grand finale of the 30 for 30 Fitness Challenge is the annual celebration of the completion of the challenge. 10 finalist names were drawn at the finalist drawing on October 7th from all of the names of those who successfully completed the 30-day challenge. Prizes for each of the winners are as follows. Grand prize, two options. Peloton bike family package, $2,800 value. NordaTrack commercial 2450 treadmill, $2,800 value. Finale first runner-up prize, $1,000 HEB gift card. Finale second runner-up prize, 2-in-1 folding treadmill plus a 30-inch standing adjustable desk, $500 value. Kids grand prize, Nintendo Switch Lite package, $650 plus value. Team challenge prize, $1,000 cash. School challenge prize, $1,000 check. All K-12 schools in the Odessa College service area were eligible to compete for this year's $1,000 school prize. Sponsors for this year's fitness challenge are Medical Center Hospital, the City of Odessa, First Basin Credit Union, HEB, Sam's Club, and CBS 7. Dollar General Awards Grants to Foundation by OA News at OAOA.com. Dollar General Literacy Foundation recently awarded the Education Foundation of Odessa a $2,000 grant to support youth literacy initiatives. This local grant award is part of more than $3 million in grants awarded this fall to nearly 760 nonprofit organizations, libraries, and schools across the 46 states that Dollar General serves. We are so grateful to the Dollar General Literacy Foundation for supporting our literacy efforts in Ector County ISD, Celeste Potter, director of the Education Foundation, said in a news release. These funds will go towards growing our Bookworms literacy program that provides students in grades PK, kinder, and first grade with new books that they get to take home to keep. The Dollar General Literacy Foundation has been proud to invest in literacy and education programs in the communities we call home for nearly 30 years, said Deneen Tor, Executive Director of the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and Vice President of Corporate Social Responsibility at Dollar General. As the educational landscape continues to shift, Our hope is that these funds will help increase access and resources for students, educators, and communities dedicated to reading and learning. The Dollar General Literacy Foundation is proud to support initiatives that help others improve their lives through literacy and education. Since its inception in 1993, the Dollar General Literacy Foundation has awarded more than $200 million in grants to nonprofit organizations, helping more than 14 million individuals take their first steps toward literacy or continued education, the release said. Obituaries. Gerald Maurice Poppy King, Odessa. Gerald Maurice King, Jerry, a.k.a. Poppy, died on October 8, 2021, due to complications from dementia and heart failure. Jerry was born on August 31, 1944, to Maurice and Olive King in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Jerry is preceded in death by his wife of over 40 years, Catherine King, his mother and father, Maurice King, as well as Olive Green. His daughter, Shauna Davis, also passed away in 2017. He is survived by his children, Brent and Carol King of Bangs, Texas, Randy and Sonia Pearson of Lubbock, Texas, Scott and Sissy Pearson of Odessa, Texas, and Tammy and Jerry Crane of San Antonio, Texas. Jerry and Catherine were married 41 years and had 5 children combined. Total, they had 12 grandchildren and 16 great-grandchildren. Funeral services will be held at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel in Odessa, Texas on October 14, 2021 at 3 p.m. All who knew Jerry are welcome to attend. Online condolences, memories, and tributes can be made to the family at www.sunsetodessa.com. Josie Rosalie Turner Warden, Odessa. Josie Rosalie Warden passed from this life on Friday, October 8th, in Odessa. She was born Thursday, February 2nd, 1961, in Midland, Texas, to Rosie and Elvis Turner. Those left to cherish her memory are Michelle Pando and Felix, Misty Russell, Jerry Russell, Joshua and Shea Warden, and Melissa Warden, sisters Violet Brooks and Roy, Sandra Payton and Nick, Kathy Dyke and Dale, Diana Terrier and Paul, plus grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Josie is preceded in death by her husband, Gerald Warden, parents Rosie and Elvis Turner, brothers Albert Turner, Billy Turner, and James, sisters Helen Turner, Judy Turner, and Janice Turner. Memorial services are scheduled for 10 a.m. Saturday, October 16th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Condolences may be sent to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death notices. Eva D. Bernard, Odessa. Eva D. Bernard, 79, of Odessa, died Saturday, October 9th in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 12 noon, Friday, October 15th, at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial follows at Sunset Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Jamie U. Fuentes, Odessa. Jamie U. Fuentes, 61, died Friday, October 8th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Lena Faye Miller, Odessa. Lena Faye Miller, 93 of Odessa, died Wednesday, October 6th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. October 15th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens of Odessa. Teresa Marie Kiska Sumner, Odessa. Teresa Marie Kiska Sumner, 73 of Odessa, died Monday, October 4th in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 3 p.m. October 15th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.